It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
All right, guys, and joining us right now is the team physician for the world champion Texas Rangers, and also the owner of TMI Sports Medicine. It's Dr. Keith Meister. Dr. Meister, I can't tell you how awesome it is to have you on here. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I appreciate the invite and the opportunity.
Hey, Keith, what did you do with your ring?
It's actually, I'm up visiting family, as I told you, in New York now, and everybody wanted to see it, so I brought it with me. So, far from me.
Did it make the metal detector go off? I mean, did they stop it at the airport and check it out, or what?
I had to check my bag to make sure that didn't leave the Quebec going through security, but it was still there.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. I mean, I know you've been with the Rangers for a while, and I remember talking to you in 2011, and we were there thinking this was it. And so perseverance for a lot of guys, and you're one of them. So good for you.
It was a heartbreak, but you know, it all paid off.
It sure did. Yes. So we wanted to have you on because your name's been in the news, and obviously I've known you for a number of years, and you even helped me identify a back problem once upon a time, but with the elbow injuries that are popping up around the game and everything, I wrote a story on my website about it and bouncing some ideas off some pitchers and just reading what's out there and hearing what some guys have had to say. And it sounds like it's a bunch of things, not just the pitch clock, as the union and the MLB kind of went back and forth on. So as one of the leading orthopedists, elbow guys in the country, what are you thinking here?
No, I think you're right. To be, you know, somewhat diplomatic about it, I think it's multifactorial. There's no question that there are a lot of issues that we can point to that do probably take some credit for the problem that we're having. I think there's one overwhelming problem, but you know, as far as the pitch clock goes, because that's the question I get asked an awful lot. I probably get asked about the pitch clock the most. And I do my own informal survey with players that come in, and it's interesting to hear, you know, different generations of pitchers have a different take on it. To be fair, in general, the younger players don't seem to draw issue with it at all. And I think there's probably a couple reasons for that. I think number one, it's now what they've gotten used to. And I think that's important. It's kind of the environment that they're growing up in as pitchers. And then the second thing is they're young. You know, they're very youthful. Their ability to recover and bounce back and endure pitch to pitch. And the resiliency, no question, is greater when you're younger. So that being said, it doesn't obviously explain the rash of shoulder elbow injuries that we're having in these young throwers. The older pitchers, on the other hand, very interestingly, they do have a problem with it. They do say that maybe not every time, and you can sit there and you can look at Jake DeGrom's time between pitches on average during a start, you know, when he was out there pitching, and it probably sits somewhere around where the pitch clock sits or less, or averages mm-hmm. less. But, you know, there are times when long at bat, 10 pitch at bat, long inning, so forth, that guys just want the ability to be able to step back off the mound and take a blow. So I think the older pitchers feel that much more than the younger pitchers do. And they bring up the very valid point that hitters during an at bat are allowed to take, you know, one timeout, so to speak, within the at bat. But yet pitchers are not.
Yeah.
Feel like everything is stacked against them and everything is done in favor of the hitters. So the pitch clock, you know, I think is maybe a factor, but I don't think it's an overwhelming factor. But I think that's just something that we need to continue to explore as an industry, because, you know, clearly it's been favorable in terms of length of games and managing sure. time that people have to sit and watch a game. And I think the longer the game, you know, as much as we all love the game, I think we all like to see shorter games. So that's
yeah. In game three of the ALDS, Nathaniel Lowe had the very famous at bat there at the start of the Rangers rally where he fouled, where it was like a 15 pitch at bat. Mm-hmm. And the players in the Rangers dugouts could tell that the pitcher was taking huge breaths, to your point about not being able to rest. And then the Rangers went in and scored five or six runs that inning. I mean, somebody pointed out last year there's a situation where Martin Perez had to cover first on back-to-back plays. And, just little things like that with the pitch clock might tax the body, might tax the lungs a little bit more in some cases. But
question. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking, you know, in those instances, those episodes, I mean, they clearly could put a pitcher at risk for or higher risk for injury. And there should be probably some accommodation made for that. I don't think there's any question. We can find maybe a better balance and still be able to shave time off games and make the game rhythm better. But I think there has to be some accommodation made for circumstances like that.
Yeah. Does MLB, with you being especially one of the lead UCL guys, do they talk to you at all about anything like this where you're actually saying maybe give the pitchers a blow where they can take a timeout too? Have they ever come to you, or have y'all had discussions with MLB?
We have. It started several months ago. I was named to a task force by Major League Baseball on an advisory committee for injuries. That being said, there's been very little discussion and very little movement over the last several months. I just had another conversation with John D'Angelo in the MLB front offices, and he's part of this and part of this fact finding and digging into this. And there's no question John has a very high level of concern and love for the game. And he's digging. It's a very, very difficult circumstance situation because there are a lot of factors that are pushing and pulling on all of this. The pitch clock is one of the, as I say, smaller issues. I think that really, when we really want to point to the two primary factors that we know without question are causing a huge spike in injury. Number one is velocity. Absolutely. Pitch velocity. You can't even begin to compare what we were looking at even 5 to 7 years ago with what we are seeing today with respect to velocity. I mean, the numbers are there. Average fastball velocity in 2002 was 88.5 miles an hour. It's now almost 95.
Wow.
It's a different world, a different era that we're living in. And that's for healthy and that's for unhealthy pitchers, meaning pitchers coming off surgery and reconstructions. Because we used to say, I mean, I've been doing this 30 years now, and I used to feel like, okay, you get your Tommy John, you're good for your set for your career. And you know, Colby Lewis, he had a TJ by Dr. Frank Job when he was 17 years old and didn't need another elbow operation until he was 35. And so I think that was more the norm rather than the exception if your career ever lasted that long. Yeah. And then, okay, you're going to last 10 to 12 years. Then it was like, okay, maybe we'll get 7, 8, 9 years, you know. And now, quite frankly, it's 3 to 5 years. It doesn't surprise me in the least when a guy re-tears at that juncture. I mean, we're seeing it over and over again. Look at the Dodgers. I mean, they've been absolutely hammered by it. And again, right. Surgery is done by very good, very competent surgeons. And so I think that, velocity is absolutely a major factor. The National Perfect Game in 2013, that means the best high school players in the country, I think there were 5 kids that threw over 94 miles an hour. Last year, there were 57 kids that threw over. So, I mean, the changes in the metrics have just changed so dramatically that the game, and certainly from a health standpoint, has not been able to keep up with it. And that's just the velocity. Yeah. The to this is what I call the designer pitches, the sweeping slider and the and what I call a power changeup. And ultimately, I think that, and I've said this before, I think the nomenclature for pitches is very antiquated. And we have all this technology and we have all this information and we can look at these pitches in so many different ways that I think that we need to discuss more. For me, it's more about extremes of movement. And particularly, I personally think the most high-risk pitches are the pitches that create the most horizontal ball movement. And so that's a sweeping slider and that's a power changeup. You know, there's so many different types of changeups now. When somebody says they throw a changeup, it's like, well, wait a minute, what do you mean by that? And actually, every pitcher that comes in my office, one of the first things I do is I flip them a baseball. And I say, show me what pitches you throw and show me how you hold that baseball. And then I photograph all their pitch grips. So I've got this now, this huge library of very, very level throwers and their pitch grips. And the presentation is across the board. Now, I mean, a changeup, you know, Jeff, you know, you and I growing up, changeup was, you know, typical circle change, three fingers on. Ball, stay behind the baseball. It was not a movement pitch. It was a deception pitch. It was right. A pitch.
Change speed.
That's it. Change in speed. It's not that anymore. You know, there's the split change, right? The Yamamoto pitch, which is a pitch with a tremendous amount of, you know, down vertical movement. There's what I call the power changeup, which is really a screwball with a changeup grip now, where guys are dramatically and forcefully turning over the ball into what we call a pronated position and trying to create arm side run. And it does that in an incredibly efficient way, but it also does that with creating a huge amount of stress on the medial elbow, on the inner side of the elbow. And so we're seeing a lot of guys that have either had Tommy Johns or haven't had them yet with very, very significant repeated tear patterns. Meaning I can go ahead and I can look at an MRI scan and to such a great extent now, I can almost predict the pattern and the way they're throwing a baseball because wow. Of the pattern of injury. Yeah, it's that, you know, it's that now. And then with a sweeping slider, probably much worse even, because you're basically what you're telling a pitcher is grip the ball with whatever sweeper grip that you choose, squeeze the ball as hard as you can and throw it as hard as you can and supinate your forearm as hard as you can at the same time. So if anybody grabs a baseball and you put your arm in kind of a layback position there, you know, your arm is in that layback position, squeezing the baseball really hard. And then you're squeezing. And at the point of release, all of a sudden you get this what we call huge eccentric load on the inner side of the elbow, meaning this contracted muscle gets stretched against the contraction at a very, very high rate, at a very forceful rate. So everything gets ripped off the medial side or the inner side of the elbow. And we see this over and over and over again now. It's so and it's so repeated. And so it's just, it's not sustainable as we all see and we're all seeing. It's just not a sustainable formula. And talking to front office people, you know, the rhetoric that you get, it just, to me, is just, there's no logic to it. Because when you're looking at baseball, you have to think about the way to endure best 162 game season. That means for a starting pitcher, you want to see at least 30 plus starts. And if you look statistically now, what's happening in baseball last year, it was just over, you know, a pitcher per team actually started a game 30 times. So that's crazy.
Right.
Again, Jeff, I always say, I mean, I could predict, I'm here in New York and, you know, a few minutes from Shea Stadium, Yankee Stadium, but, you know, it was Seaver, Kuzman, Matlock. I mean, I can predict that. I could pick a ticket, a date on the schedule and say, okay, Tom Seaver's pitching this day and I'm going to get to go see him pitch because right. I know he'll be up, you know, in this rotation at this point in time. Forget it now. It's impossible. And that's bad for the fan, right? As much as it is forget about the health aspects and why this is occurring and the implications of health on this, but it's for the fan who wants to gravitate to certain players and latch onto these players and grow up idolizing these players and loving the game because of these players. I think that's a real black eye on the game itself. So,
yeah, you know, one thing you've always told me, Keith, is you can't put a V10 in a Volkswagen. And that seems like to your velocity, your point on velocity. I mean, the elbow's not built to withstand what is happening in the game.
No, and there are really two ways to develop a pitcher, and this is what is problematic, because it's unfortunately the healthier way is not the more reinforced way, or it's certainly not the way that baseball is leaning, right? You can either, you know, and I've talked to front office people, and this actually absolutely I think is very disturbing. But they say, well, we sit there and we tell these 18, 19 year olds, you have two options. We can either teach you how to pitch, you know, this particular way, meaning throw off your fastball, learn to throw strikes, control the zone, change speeds, a la Kyle Hendricks, who's done this for years, a la Dane Dunning, right?
Cody. Sure.
Who are doing that in our rotation now. So it's an achievable way to do this, that you can be very successful doing it. But that takes time and that takes patience. And they say, well, you'll maybe only get to double A, triple A if we do that. Or we can show you these two magnificent pitches and you can be in the big leagues in 2 years. Well, what do you think this 18, 19 year old or 20 year old is going to do?
Absolutely.
Right. Going to the big leagues. Yeah. So, you know, and I've had these arguments with other front office people. They say statistically we can look at these pitches and we can say, well, you know, you throw this fastball at this velocity and the, you know, the OPS against that pitch is going to be 220. You throw this pitch with this velocity and this spin and the OPS against that pitch is going to be 180, 190. And I say, well, that's great. You can take statistics to bolster any argument if you put it in the right circumstance. And the right circumstances, that's an instant in time. Now, how does that play out over 162 games and 30 plus starts or 70 appearances for a guy coming out of the pen? Well, it doesn't play very well. And I've said many times before, if a guy has a 0.8 whip in the last 2 months, what value is that to the organization? I'd rather have a guy with a 1.1, 1.2 whip, maybe a little less war, but he's there the entire 162.
Sure.
The team that's healthy, right? The team that's healthy in the postseason is going to win.
Yeah.
And
let me ask you this now. I've heard some of them talk, some of the big league pitchers that are talking out there are talking about the tack and the sticky on the ball. If that, you know, baseball outlawed that a couple of years ago. Yeah, the grip. Do you think that also contributes?
I actually, my sense now is it does. And the first guy that I really had some deeper conversations about this with was Tyler Glasnow. You know, around the time he got hurt, we did his surgery, and he was, you know, he's obviously a very, very talented guy. He's also a very bright guy. And, you know, he brought up the issue. And baseball's counter argument to that has been, well, the spin rates haven't changed. Well, the spin rates haven't changed because the pitchers have adapted, and they've adapted in such a way they just squeeze the ball that much harder. So it's just an additive negative effect here. So, they have been able to keep the ball spinning, but they now have to squeeze it that much harder. What the hitters, interestingly, will tell you is they're much more fearful when they step in the batter's
ball. Absolutely. Absolutely.
They don't know where the ball's going now.
Exactly.
Every once in a while, right, that ball slips out, and then it's, you know, it's plunked to the ribs or at the head or whatnot.
Or Josh Young's wrist. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you know, again, that's the counter argument, but that's a specious argument, I feel.
Yeah. And I'm not going to talk to a doctor about doctor stuff, but if your forearm is sore, something else has got to take the brunt. You know, so it could lead a tight forearm might lead to a shoulder injury. Is that accurate to say?
Compensate.
Absolutely. Well, and it's all part of what we call the kinetic chain. So, you know, it becomes what's the weak link in the chain, and it's impossible to take that kind of grip on a baseball and only isolate the contraction within the forearm muscles, the entire upper extremity, the lat, the teres, the subscap in the shoulder, they all get wound this tight. And so we're seeing a huge spike in lat teres, teres major teres, subscap. Yeah. I mean, these are muscles that, right? I mean, Jeff, you've been doing this a long time. You probably never heard of 10 years ago.
Exactly.
When you were sitting there doing a lat pull down or something, but in baseball, what does that all mean, right? I mean, what's that all about? But now it's every day. it's every day. And yeah. So, and that's been, to your point, you know, well taken, that's led to, again, another significant further spike in these injuries, and they're not benign.
The first time I heard teres major was Jerickson Profar. Mm. First time I heard subscap was Derek Holland.
Yeah.
And the shoulder, it seems like a lot comes together here, but there's all the stuff in the back of the shoulder. What's in the elbow? I mean, there's the flexor tendon below the elbow, but is it just the UCL?
That's pretty much it. I mean, those are, you know, they kind of each do. I mean, the bony anatomy of the elbow helps to stabilize the elbow. But, you know, with respect to the soft tissues, it's your flexor mass and your ligament and the seat belt and the suspenders, I always say. And they each do a 50-50 job of holding up the pants, you know. And so when one goes, one gets fatigued, well, the other is naturally going to blow.
Yeah.
Especially at those velocities and those spin rates.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's interesting. I watched the little video on his website. I went because I was trying to get some bio and look at your stuff at the TMI website, which is awesome. He shows little videos of every surgery they do. That was interesting, even for someone dumb like me, watching the elbow and kind of explaining where the UCL was and how you do it. It's pretty interesting, the inner workings. Of course, I never threw a baseball hard, so I didn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, one of the things, I mean, I'm extremely compulsive. And so one of the things I do is I photograph every surgery I do, every open surgery I do. So I got close to 2000 elbow ligaments that we've done. And I've got this incredible library of all these photographs. And that's really helped us to better understand how well we're doing. I mean, if somebody doesn't do well, we're able to go back and say, technically speaking, is there something else we could have done differently or should have done differently? And I think that's have helped to evolve the procedure to not necessarily keep up with what's going on in baseball today, but to maybe at least move the needle a little bit.
Yeah. We had Avery Weems on our show a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about his ordeal, and it kind of unique that he'd had the injury before the one when you finally operated. He said that, the UCL was fine, pulled off the bone, and you put in another ligament from somewhere else in his body, and also your brace. Mm-hmm. Talk about the brace procedure and how it works instead of just a ligament replacement. Or do you do them all? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, the brace, you know, the brace has been around for a long time, but it was used initially in other parts of the body and then got adapted for the elbow. And I personally started using it and changed the technique from what was at least initially explained in 2014. So essentially, I think the biggest misconception is that, you know, a Tommy John procedure is a ligament transplant procedure. It's not. It's a reinforcement procedure. And for people that don't know, we're actually in the 50th anniversary year of the TJ. September will be Tommy John's 50th anniversary, which is kind of cool. And what's amazing to me as an aside is he is not in the Hall of Fame.
Right. I was going to ask you about that.
That's insane. I think that's incredible that this guy who, you know, who won as many games, you know, several 20 game seasons and
right.
longevity that he had and took the chance that he did.
Right.
Now, you know, is not in the Hall of Fame is to me is just such a, you know, just a lack of recognition of baseball history and, you know, a historical moment. It's just, to me, I don't understand it because, you know, there's only one pitcher in the Hall of Fame that's had a Tommy John.
Tick tock.
Yeah.
Lay it on me.
John Smoltz.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I forgot. Did you do his?
No,
Dr. Andrews did John Smoltz, you know, years ago. And that's, you know, it's interesting because John in his Hall of Fame acceptance speech said, you know, he'll probably be the only person, you know, that is ever inducted into the Hall of Fame because, you know, depending upon what the parameters become, you think about how disrupted pitchers' careers now. Now, I think obviously Verlander will be the second. He'll probably be the second. Hopefully Tommy John's the second because he But we'll see. Maybe somebody there in Cooperstown will recognize just ultimately the impactfulness of what he's added to the game, and he'll get his own room. You know,
good point.
Yeah.
Your point is so right, because he really took a chance. He was like a guinea pig.
He was.
His doctor came to him and said, hey, we got this idea. And he said, let's do it. I want to still play.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story. Dr. Job, you know, I mean, when he was alive, I mean, rest in peace. It was brilliant man and brilliant surgeon. You know, he said, if I was smarter, I would have realized and would have done this in Sandy Koufax. Because Sandy, Sandy's ligament went. And, you know, at the time, obviously, it was several years before before Dr. Job had adapted this procedure. And I'll tell you another funny story. The second Tommy John ever, Brent Strom, the pitching coach for the Diamondbacks.
Okay.
But and I tell Stromy this all the time. I said, Stromy, just think about it. What would have happened if you were the first? What would we be calling the procedure?
Yeah, Brent Strom doesn't roll off the tongue, you know.
No.
The BS procedure doesn't.
There you go. I like it.
That's great.
Oh, man. Back to the brace, though.
Yes.
I thought it was initially like only position players were getting the brace.
Yeah.
What made pitchers confident enough in the procedure?
Well, here's what it is. I mean, as I told you, TJ is a tendon reinforcement procedure, and obviously for many, many years it's done very well, and it's still a good operation to do today. The problem is on the elite side. Is there something that we can do better? And so we started reinforcing and repairing the ligaments with this brace, which kind of looks like a glorified shoelace. Back in about 14 for me anyway, you know, other folks maybe a year or prior to that, but I've got now probably 60 pro guys with these braces in the elbows, and pitchers and position players and, you know, upper levels, lower levels alike. And I think there's still, you know, some degree of trepidation of just putting in a brace, because you really don't want to reinforce bad tissue alone. Mm-hmm. So you expect that this device is going to account for tissue that's not necessarily healthy. So you want to put back hopefully healthy tissue with a clean tear, and you can maybe just brace it. We put one of these in Trevor Story last year, and he was back about 6 months in the game. Obviously, Brock Purdy's the big one, right. But backs are very different than baseball.
Yeah.
Then in 2018, because of partly my concern about, there are certain types of injuries to the ligament that are much higher risk that we knew were not going to do as well with a standard procedure, and that didn't necessarily fit the mold for a brace. So I started doing what we call a hybrid reconstruction, where we put a brace in with a tendon graft. And so I essentially married the best components of the two procedures. And the first one I did was Kyle Cody.
He had
an odd circumstance, and I went to Kyle and I said, Kyle, I've been thinking about this for a while. You know, you've got a difficult situation with your elbow. You know, this is what I'd like to try. Are you okay with it? And he said, you know, Kyle's a bright guy, and he thought about it. He said, yep, makes sense. Go ahead. I trust you. And that was the first. And so since then, I've done probably 350, 370. I don't know where my numbers are now. And every elite level thrower, actually every pitcher that I need to do a reconstruction on. And the qualifications for that are, it's obviously a torn ligament, but also the tissue quality. We don't have confidence in that's going to hold up if we just put a brace in. So we add tissue. And so it's a tendon plus a brace procedure. And I mean, the numbers are quite large now. I mean, this is what we put in Glasnow and Maeda and, you know, obviously Alcantara. I mean, quite a number of elite guys have this hybrid reconstruction now. And so that's on the primary side. And then, you know, on the revision side, where numbers, meaning second Tommy John or third Tommy John procedures, you know, the numbers and the results and the outcomes are just notoriously not very good. So what we did was, again, started doing this hybrid reconstruction procedure in the revisions. And rather than 55-60%, we're, you know, getting significantly better numbers. Kirby Yates is a great example. You know, he was a second TJ. Cole Reagan's second hybrid hybrid reconstruction. So I think there's something to it. I think we're moving the needle. I mean, there's no perfect answer because these guys, you know, look, I mean, at some point, all these guys will break again. They play long enough. Hopefully those careers go long enough and we can look back and say, wow, you got 10 years out of this one. Hopefully let's get 10 out of the next one. And then even on the revision side, the second Tommy John side, you know, there's a technique that we've come up with that we actually just repair the grafts that are torn rather than have to go back and do a completely new second Tommy John. Okay. And that's what we're doing in quite a few. And we've got, you know, we've got some pretty good numbers, 40 to 45 of these now. And probably 80% of those are pro elbows. So we've got a good, good understanding of the level of functionality of the procedure. So as I said, there's no perfect. I mean, these guys have the ability to ruin anything that we do, but you know, I think we've moved the needle a little bit. I think that we're a little bit better, and certainly I'm optimistic, cautiously so, and hopeful that at least we'll get little longer period of time and better results. But look, I mean, the game that still doesn't make up for everything that's changed in the game.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, it seems like you and Dr. Ella Trotch in LA are the two guys. Is the brace making that big of a difference for you personally, as far as your workload or I mean, you have a lot of notches on your belt. It seems like it's you or the other. It doesn't seem like there's anybody else doing these.
Yeah, he and I are very, very, very good friends, actually. And you know, in most of these cases, go back and forth between the two of us. And you know, I feel very fortunate to have him as a friend and a colleague. And I know he feels the same way. And because this is, you know, this is not a one man job. I mean, it's obviously it's high stakes. It's you know, it's stressful, and it's nice to be able to pick up the phone and call somebody that you trust and that you have confidence in as a colleague and a friend that we can get honest advice from each other and lean on each other when things are hairy. Yeah.
That's good.
Let's ask you something real quick. Now, you do the surgeries, you're into this, you're a physician and all that. Now, you love sports. Were you an athlete? Did you play any sports growing up?
Yeah, I played soccer and baseball, and I actually, it was interesting. I could have gone to either Duke or Brown to play soccer, and at the time that I was trying to figure out the path that I was going to take or how I was going to take it, there were a number of schools that had these accelerated medical school programs, and so instead I ended up heading to Boston, and Boston University had a combined 6-year BA MD degree program. So essentially you went through undergrad in 2 years and then on to medical school. And I felt like I knew what I wanted to do at that point, although I didn't, who knows how things are going to turn out at that age. I got very lucky and very fortunate. I met some great people along the way and they helped to guide me, but that was But yes, I mean, that was kind of my direction. And so it's worked out. Obviously I've been very, very fortunate.
You had a lot of hockey experience, a lot of hockey background, as you know, Team USA or US and the Stars, of course.
You know, I grew up in New York, just a few minutes from the New York Rangers training facility here. And then being in Boston, at Boston University was one of the top college hockey programs in the country. So while I was in training, I covered a lot of college hockey games. And then in 1992, when I was in Birmingham, Alabama, Dr. Andrews obviously was there, but also Dr. Bill Clancy, who I developed a very good relationship with. And Dr. Clancy was the medical director for USA Hockey. And it was kind of a fortuitous set of circumstances. It was end of November, actually it was early December. And I was sitting in the lounge with Dr. Clancy, you know, between cases, and he gets a phone call, and the doctor that was supposed to cover the World Junior Championships, which is the U-20 teams, dropped out. And you know, Clancy and I had a really good relationship, and I heard him talking, and I turned to him. I said, "Bill, send me." And he looked at me and he laughed. I said, "Yeah, send me, man. I can do this." And he said, "Okay." And so I stepped right in, and I covered every World Junior Championship from there to like 1999. And I these are all the kids, the first rounders, and
sure.
when yeah. they were draft. And so I, you know, you travel with them for two and a half weeks, close to 3 weeks, at a time. And it was a time in their lives where hockey, I think, was probably more fun for so many of them. It was before it became a business for so many of them, and their families were there and usually traveling with them. So you got to be very, very close to the guys. And I wasn't that much older than them. So, so it was kind of a cool set of circumstances and relationships that I developed in the hockey world. And then when I moved to Texas, I stopped doing that in 99. And I just had too much else on my plate. And then when I moved to Texas in 04, I took over the Stars in 05, and I covered them for several seasons. And all these kids that I've known since they were, 17, 16, 17, 18, 19, were now in the NHL. So it was fun to see them blossom as they did as athletes and players and people.
One thing I forgot to ask you about when we were talking about the medical stuff, there are a lot of oblique injuries.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Pitchers and hitters alike.
Yeah.
Look,
what's up with that?
Same lines, bigger, faster, stronger, and it becomes weak link in the chain.
Yeah.
Again, the obliques, just like lats and subscaps and everything we're seeing in that kinetic chain, the muscular chain for pitchers. I mean, it's those front side obliques which are the worst. When they're backside, not such a difficult thing to get over, but the front sides, same thing for the hitter. I mean, more power, bigger bat speeds, higher average exit velocities, and that's just, again, it's all part of the same. But durability, sustainability ultimately is what we need to be striving for here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Hey folks, if you're in need of an orthopedist, you got one of the best in the business, and right down the street. I've been there myself, and great new facility, which really isn't new anymore.
No,
but you've expanded to Frisco and Mansfield. So, I just can't thank you enough for coming on. This has been fascinating. We could keep going, but
no kidding. It's great for you to stop down. I know you're seeing your mother there in New York, and you're taking time to be with us. We really appreciate it. And look, for you guys, if you'll go on the TMI website, they have these little, they're animated things about if you've got an injured kid, you can just kind of look at what the injury is. I mean, they got knees, elbows, everything. I was like, got stuck in it going, wow, this is interesting. It's really neat. It's educational. Even for dumb people like me, I was going, okay, now I see how this works and how that works in there. But Dr. Meister, I can't thank you enough for coming on with us. This has been fantastic.
I appreciate it. Thank you both.
Hey, what's the youngest TJ you've ever done?
Oh, years back, I did one on a 14, somebody in the 14-year-old age group. He was very, very physically mature. And so he was probably, 16 plus years in terms of just physical maturation. But I won't go that young anymore. I'll put a brace in them. We've had very, very good luck just repairing them. And if, we can save them the bigger procedure in that age bracket, then I think we're probably doing them a real service and a real favor. But look, I mean, it doesn't bode well when somebody's blowing out at that young age. Is that they're going to physically be able to make it, to an elite level, college level. I mean, those chances are pretty damn slim at that point. Parents
Imagine.
Yeah, you just can't fix and heal everything and expect that everything's going to be okay again.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, yeah. I mean, my son's 11, and so we're at the baseball field every dang weekend, and I'm telling him fastballs and changeups.
Too much competition though. Just go out and play. I mean, go out and play. Play catch in the backyard and pick up games with your friends. I mean, but everything now, unfortunately, is this intense, organized environment, and that spikes. We say that spikes loads. That increases stress and load. Every time you're in that competitive environment.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
Well, Dr. Meister, you done, Jeff? That's good.
I'm done. Yeah. for now.
I could go for another hour and a half and listen to him talk, but I know you got to get back to it. We're going to see you obviously around the field
for there sure.
when you're in town at the home games, especially. That's the ones I'm at all the time. But Dr. Mice, we can't thank you enough for coming on. Guys, we're going to go down in the bus leagues right after this.
Take care, guys. Thank you.